Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host, the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Sologi. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so this week is for March 16th, 2024. We are now deep into March and more or less into spring, and it's definitely out there because basically everything has now been covered in a just nice shade of green from all the pollen. And yeah, I'll be talking about that a little bit more later, but before that, what have we got this week? Well, amongst other things, TikTok is once again part of the big moral panic. The House of Representatives recently voted on a bipartisan bill to try and get rid of it. It's, for the record, probably not going to go anywhere, but we'll be talking about it. It's really stupid. The father of a certain school shooter was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. Andrew Tate is going to got his ass thrown in prison once again. And of course, we got some other political shenanigans. The guy who was the whistleblower for Boeing was found dead this week in an extremely suspicious circumstances. We now have a new wind farm. A certain website has been blocked in Texas. It's the one you think it is, and it's going to be hilarious. And of course, we got a bunch of entertainment news as well, including some trailers and some news about streaming as well. And we got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off as always. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of work in this week, so not really too much time for much else. But I did get a chance to watch one of the new releases on Netflix here in the last couple of weeks, Damsel. Mm-hmm. The new Millie Bobby Brown movie, mm-hmm. Where she plays a princess from a sort of like a cold land, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They don't really describe it too much other than mm-hmm. they seem to be running out of resources, essentially. Yeah. And then her father ends up making this deal that she will marry the son of a fairly prosperous kingdom and dealing with that. But then comes to find out that part of that is kind of a trick where the princess, the newly minted princess, gets tossed into this cave where a dragon then eats them and sort of keeps the whole thing going. And you sort of learn early about this whole thing happening. Then you start learning the real story of what happened and why this dragon has come into this deal with the humans nearby. Mm-hmm. And she's not very happy at, you know, coming upon this realization and, you know, tries to figure out a way to put this kingdom in their place for once and for all. So yeah, it's a pretty fun movie. Kind of got a good bit of spooky vibes early on as she is, you know, landing in this cave, pretty rough shape, and figuring out things how things work there and sort of her own ability to, you know, get back out of the cave and maybe get some payback. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a fun one, worth checking out. So yeah, there you go. The other thing I've been continuing to watch is more Dragon Ball. I finished up the tournament arc and I'm in the middle of at least the first part of the Red Ribbon Army arc. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, fun time. There is dealing with the end of the tournament arc where they're just like, well, we still got time to, for the next tournament, but Roshi just says to Krillin and Goku, like, you need to leave and go do your own shit. Because he doesn't want to deal with them for a while. Mm. And so, yeah, Goku goes on his whole journey trying to find the 4-star ball, but continually runs into other things going on. I believe I'm about to get to the tower that He meets his first android
mm-hmm.
from the Red Ribbon Army. So looking forward to that. So that's pretty much where I'm at on that. And yeah, that's about all I've watched. But I have been playing a good bit of Balatro this past week as I work my way through and trying to, you know, unlock more Jokers and all that. Doing a decent time at that, though. Yeah. Still not been having a ton of luck. I've gotten a few times to Anti-8, which is the that is the essentially end of a main run. And then you mm-hmm. can keep trying to go on further beyond that if you want,
mm-hmm.
Which isn't too hard to do. But, you know, I've been getting to Anti-8 a couple times, and usually is where the setup I have kind of just runs out of steam.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not been a great time, but still working my way through. I've learned a good bit more. There's a good guide on the Steam that is a good like beginner's guide of mm-hmm. things you should know, all that kind of stuff. So I've been trying to take that in, though also running to that sort of situation where you get a lot mm-hmm. of good dumb beginner's luck early on, and then as you learn more how to, you know, play, your luck starts to get much worse
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And so yeah, that's been a lot of what that game has been doing to me. So
mm-hmm.
still been jumping in, playing a couple rounds here and there.
Yeah.
Definitely not playing as much as Phil has, but still having fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where he's at now. Oh, he's up to 50 hours already.
Mm-hmm.
I have 18 hours in. So he is just constantly in that game. So yeah, that's been pretty much all I've been doing. So what have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I'm still playing Unicorn Overlord. I have now liberated two of the major kingdoms, from the Empire. I think it was Cornea. Well, not Cornea. It's, cause Cornea is where the Empire is located. I did manage to liberate a bunch of the areas surrounding that, but it's still technically under Imperial occupation. I liberated, Drakenhold, which is a sort of, it's sort of a country that's off to the right. That's like, it's sort of like a combination of like the Holy Roman Empire, but it's like taking place in like the Iberian Peninsula. There's a lot of like very sort of, you know, sort of Prussian imagery involving, you know, their heraldry and everything. But it's like in a lot of like desert and rocky terrain. So it looks a little bit more Spanish, and you know, the people are a bit duskier in color, especially when you go into the towns and go into like the taverns and everything. They're very obviously supposed to be inspired by the Spanish culture. I mean, they even have like paella as like one of the main things they serve you to eat. Oh yeah, this is a Vanillaware game, so expect a lot of food stuff. And in fact, food is how you, well, it's one of the ways you're able to like build up your rapport with with the various people in your army. And I also, last night, I liberated Elfheim, which you can probably guess what that is. That's the place where all the elves and the fey folk live. There's a bunch of regular people who live there too, but there's elves who are the predominant inhabitants there and who are, you know, the royals. And that whole thing was, It was difficult, but not terribly difficult. I am now going up to Bestorius, which is, that's where all the beast people live, as well as some regular people as well, because there's just a bunch of them sort of spread out all over the place. And Bestorius is definitely like supposed to be more Nordic in appearance. They have like long ships and everything. It's all snowy and, you know, icy, and their weaponry definitely has like a Nordic look to it. And yeah, that's where I'm at right now. Eventually I go over at some point, I'm going to have to go over to the last area before, the actual like liberation of Cornea, which is Albion. And that's where like the seat of their major religion is. Yeah, that's where I'm at right now. That game still manages to surprise me in just how how much going on underneath the hood there is. The way that you can just sort of get all of these new skills and everything, and you can basically program all of the individual members of your little platoon and, you know, just pre-plan it. And essentially, you can, it's so cool to do. It's amazing just the amount of options you have, and they continuously keep introducing more as you go on. Like, you know, you have like your regular archers, which are, you know, what they call hunters, and those are just dudes with bows and arrows. But you'll also come across what they call arbalists, which are people with like crossbows. You'll come across fencers who are dual sword wielders. There's a bunch of stuff. There's like griffin riders. There's also dragon riders who show up. And you know, they continuously find new ways to make each battle unique and challenging. Everything from like adding new things to the, you know, like new like stationary weapons like catapults and ballista and stuff that you can use to just, you know, to fight and oftentimes like fairly quickly get rid of enemies in a specific area. The catapults in particular are damn near game breaking if it weren't for the fact that it takes so long for them to reload because they have such an insanely large such a large area of attack that they can use. But and of course, you know, the graphics are still amazing because it's VanillaWare and it's still great. And God, this game is so good. Definitely a game of the year contender for me so far. And we're just getting into spring now. But as far as like gaming is concerned, that's more or less what the only thing I've been playing. I've been sort of going also back into Splatoon 3 and also Helldivers 2 a little bit, but mostly it's been Unicorn Overlord because the games, you know, the gameplay cycle is that addictive, and in just endlessly rewarding. It's a great game. But on top of that, I have been, you know, doing my usual, which is reading. I have been reading this book called The Sparrow by Mary, I think her name is Mary Doyle Russell. Hold on, let me check. Yeah, it's Mary Doria Russell. Yeah, that's her name. A British author. And it's essentially a literary science fiction novel. And it's essentially like, it's a first contact story. And the basic idea is, at some point in the early 2000s, a bunch of scientists managed to get a signal from what they think may be of alien origin. And they eventually are able to confirm that, yeah, it's alien origin and it's coming from the Alpha Centauri system. And that means that now they need to find someone that can do first contact. So what do? If you want to get together a group of individuals whose purpose is to represent Earth culture in its best and brightest and to have them have enough knowledge that they hope that they can in some way communicate and, you know, start relation, interplanetary relations with these new aliens. Well, obviously you're going to send, you know, scientists, maybe a computer engineer or something like that, but you also need someone who's going to represent Earth spiritually. And in this case, they decide to send a group of Jesuit priests. And then only one of them comes back. And the guy that comes back is basically horribly traumatized. His hands have been mutilated, and he's just not speaking to anybody. And over the course of the story, he slowly relates to this one guy who's acting as sort of like his interviewer slash bodyguard, what it is that happened over there. And yeah, it's easy to read. It's a very literary book, but it's also extremely easy to read. It won the Arthur C. Clarke Award back in 1996 when it was released, and it is, oh, It is so good, but it is also heavy as well. Believe me when I tell you, we're talking about some really heavy shit here. But damn, is it good. And other than that, just the usual type of stuff, music. I've really started listening again to Hide and his stuff. Started, paying attention to the later stuff he did after his debut album. His debut album is really good, but the stuff that he did after that really leans into the industrial side of things. And it can be kind of a, it can be a bit much. But so that's that. And honestly, just really having to do with, just dealing with the early days of spring, which of course means a crap ton of pollen is everywhere. And it is, it's everywhere. It's floating around in clouds. It's covering everything. I'm having to like take Flonase every morning and, washing my hands constantly because that stuff is, this isn't just any kind of pollen. This is pine tree pollen. It's stuff that will, stuff that will basically, it will hide in places that you do not expect it will hide in. And if you have just, if you know anything about hay fever and what that shit does to people, it's not fun. I mean, I've learned to deal with it, but, it happens. That's about all of it. Do you have anything you want to mention before we move on?
Nope.
All right. Yeah, so it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And Chris, I want to ask you something. Have you ever gone to like a museum like where they had like Greek or Roman statues?
Probably.
Yeah, maybe you have. You might have. It doesn't necessarily have to be authentic. It could be a replica or something like that. I've always wanted to like go to Rome or something like that, or the Louvre, and be able to see like some of those really old Greco-Roman statues, like the various versions of David, Michelangelo's David, or Donatello's David, which is extremely gay, by the way. If you just look it up, Donatello's David. It's like I remember reading a story somewhere where they were touring to see the thing, and the tour guy was like, "Yeah, there's nothing historical or biblical to say that David wore a feathery hat or anything like that. It's just Donatello was like, I'm going to do this, and I'm just going to give it a biblical name, so I'll get money for it." But this is especially true because that was Renaissance era stuff, right? But then you go back earlier to like the Roman Empire and ancient Greece, and we have a bunch of like surviving sculptures from that era of like, it can be, of various individuals like Socrates. We've got one or two busts of Socrates, of Julius Caesar, of the various emperors, of Hercules or Heracles, Perseus, all the various, mythological heroes, and, Leonidas, and all the famous warriors. And anybody who ever looks at those things are always struck by, well, among other things, the incredible quality of the sculpture, because the ancient Romans were incredible sculptors and made some incredible pieces of art back then, when they had time. But the other thing was, I think a lot of people found aesthetically pleasing, was the fact that these were all statues that were carved out of marble. And so because of that, they were, this ivory white or grayish white to them that, and if you ever look at like paintings that came about from the Renaissance or onward that took place during the Roman that were like historical paintings during the Roman Empire, and you'll see those statues out there, and you think about, man, being able to see those statues in their glory days when they were up on a pedestal and there were all these columns and temples and stuff everywhere. It must have just been a sight to see. Here's the thing about that. Okay, first small little tidbit. Because the Roman Empire kept going through so many emperors, they got to a point where they started making like heroic sculptures of the emperors where the heads could just be taken off and then replaced with another one because it kept happening so fast. So it was, a lot of sculptures that if you look closely, you might see like a little inseam around the neck. That's because a lot of times the heads were meant to be taken off and then replaced with another one after an emperor died. But here's the other thing, too. See, this is especially funny when you ever go on Twitter and you see all those like radical traditional guys with like the Greco-Roman busts as their avies in there. If there's one thing you want to tell them to really piss them off, it's this. Back in the day when those sculptures were contemporary, they actually painted them. Yes, they painted them in garish colors, really garish colors that were like supposed to be somewhat lifelike and yet not quite. Basically what they would do is they would paint these sculptures, you know, fleshy colors because, you know, and if they were wearing any kind of clothing at all, the clothing was usually painted some bright color. It was usually a bright red or a bright blue, something that you could see from like all the way down the street, because that was kind of the point behind these pieces. That's the thing about statues. Statues, by their very nature, are not just artistic subjects. They're also supposed to be propaganda, especially if they are commissioned by a government. And since, you know, the Roman Empire was really into the concept of an imperial cult, you can imagine they loved, you know, commissioning all of these statues of the current emperors and their families. They would often also paint their skin flesh colored. And if it was like a heroic nude, yes, they would also paint the genitalia. They would also paint the pubic hair if they had any painted on there. Sculpted on there, and they would also like give them, white, paint white for the eyes and blue and, you know, whatever color their eyes were. And it wasn't like even close to realistic. Like it was supposed to be so garish that you could see it. You know, you could like just look up at it from like several feet away and say, oh, yeah, he's supposed to have blue eyes, something like that. And they often also like painted on their lips, too, so that a lot of times it looked like they had lipstick or something, almost like a lot of them had makeup of some kind. Because the reason we think that all these sculptures had this sort of marble look is because over the years, the paint would just peel off because, you know, paint doesn't last that long. And eventually, you know, over a decade or so from, you know, just, you know, weather and just regular wear and tear, it's going to peel off. And, you know, the actual sculpture will remain behind because, you know, it's marble and marble is fairly durable a lot of times. But, you know, so by the time people by the time the Renaissance came around and people were like rediscovering, or at least the scholarly classes were rediscovering all of these sculptures, the paint for them had long since disappeared. So they ended up having this very mistaken idea that, you know, these statues were originally, you know, when they were made, they were all made this aesthetically pleasing, you know, unpainted marble color. But they weren't. This was especially funny, came up historically, because a few years ago when Assassin's Creed Odyssey came out, well, actually, I think it might have been, yeah, it was Odyssey. When Assassin's Creed Odyssey came out, which, you know, takes place during ancient Greece, there was, you know, the game, you know, I mean, the Assassin's Creed games, they're not incredibly historically accurate, but they try to, you know, attend to some degree of historical accuracy where they think it counts. And so you started seeing all of these statues showing up in that game. But the problem is, as anyone would tell you, they were all, you know, plain marble, which is not what those statues looked like back then. They were all painted over. And so they had to patch it over a couple of months later to add in, you know, a bunch of paint. But yeah, so those old sculptures you've often seen from the ancient world, they did not originally stay that type of variety. They were all painted over in their heyday. And yeah, that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. And yeah, so with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And our big asshole of the week is the House of Representatives. They voted on a bipartisan bill to require ByteDance to sell TikTok or face a ban on all U.S. devices.
Yeah. And kind of overwhelmingly voted for 352 to 65.
Yeah.
Bit more, you know, the Republicans, I think, had a bigger margin that voted for it versus the Democrats, but there are definitely some warning signs about this bill that it kind of moved through the committees up to a vote really fast within a few days, which AOC called out that's the main reason why she was voting against it.
Yeah.
That they had not had enough time to really go over it and see like what all is in there and properly debate it. But yeah, this is something that's probably not going to make the Senate, though Biden has said that he would sign this if it gets to him. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it doesn't really make much sense at this point. Like the thing they did, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years ago, whatever it was, where they essentially just banned government phones from having TikTok on it, is pretty sufficient because the threat by TikTok is not really all that much at this point. Especially compared to, say, like Facebook or Twitter and that kind of stuff, which are, you know, homegrown social media platforms, or, you know, definitely not places that have had issues with, you know, data security, data mining and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, this is a thing that people are calling out as a potential violation of people's First Amendment rights. Especially as one that a lot of young people, especially left-leaning people, go to for, you know, expressing themselves. That seems convenient that the first one of these that they threatened to ban is the one that, you know, people, there are a lot of people very much being talking about, you know, having to overthrow capitalism to save the planet, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, the others that are more heavily leaning on the right side. Not that there aren't Nazis on TikTok. There's plenty of those that it loves to surface to people. But yeah, this seems like something that really should not get, have gotten this far. But I imagine there's also not any money being thrown around here that comes from, say, Meta.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crooked from top to bottom. It's, you know, like, obviously I've got some issues with TikTok, other, you know, among other things, like it's much like all those other social media, its algorithm is very flawed in the way that it shovels a lot of awful content to people, but for whatever reason TikTok is sort of the scapegoat. And it's very obvious that, you know, the people doing this are all people who are connected to, like, the other major, you know, the other major social media giants. So, you know, apparently for people who claim to like free markets, they don't like free markets all that much.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Our next asshole of the week is the father of the Oxford High School shooter. They were found guilty of involuntary manslaughter and for very obvious reasons.
Yeah. We talked about the mother being on trial a few weeks ago, a month or so ago. But yeah, the father was sort of up for his trial here not too long after. And yeah, was found guilty on all four counts of involuntary manslaughter. Yeah, these are precedent-setting. First-time prosecutors have sought to hold parents of a mass school shooter criminally responsible. Did not help that sort of upon finding out that their son had done this, that they both fled. Were found, you know, some days later. But yeah, whole thing there. So yeah, we'll see how much of a punishment they get as far as timing. I imagine going away for quite a while, much like their son. So. Yeah, you can have fun. Because these are the sort of parents that got their kid a gun for Christmas, I think it was. We're kind of very lax on letting them play around with it.
Mm-hmm.
And ends up leading to the kid shooting a bunch of students.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Yeah. Yes. And our last asshole of the week, let's frank it, he's probably the asshole of the decade. Andrew Tate. After his Romanian trial is over, Andrew Tate will be extradited to the UK to face charges of sexual aggression in yet another case. By the way, for those you don't know, Andrew Tate got his ass thrown back in jail again because Aiden Ross gave away his escape plan.
Yeah.
Oh, God. These are not intelligent people, I swear.
No. But yeah, he is, let's see. Yeah, judge in Romania approved the extradition of Andrew and Tristan Tate to the UK, where they will face charges of sexual aggression in a case mm-hmm. that dates back more than a decade.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't be sent to the UK until after they face their trial mm-hmm. in Romania on separate charges of human trafficking, rape, and forming a criminal group to sexually exploit women. So they got a fun time ahead here. Yeah. And also, aside from the criminal case in the UK and Romania, he also faces a separate civil case in the UK. So, but he claims he's the victim of a conspiracy against men who embrace their masculinity. So, in case you're aware, they're going with that. But yeah, they don't yet know what charges his brother's facing, but probably some form of aiding in this stuff. So, there you go. Very fun time for them.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, yeah, but we do have heroes of the week to make it all not terrible. Flint, Michigan will starting very soon, start giving every new mother $7,500 in cash aid over a year.
Yeah, I think this started this year.
Yeah.
They have had one of the country's highest rates of child poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not also linking that to the the water crisis they've had.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a pediatrician who helped expose that lead problem has now launched a first-of-its-kind move to tackle poverty, giving every new mother $7,500 in cash aid over a year. I believe they get $500 a month for the next year or so. So that's great to see. Helps mothers deal with the, especially the onslaught of, you know, requirements for money to get just diapers and food and all the sorts of little things that come with having a kid that not everybody's able to cover. So yeah, this new cash transfer program, RX Kids, starts during pregnancy. The first payment is $1,500 to encourage prenatal care. After delivery, mothers will get $500 a month for the first year. Okay, so that's how that goes. Baby's birth is also peak time for poverty. Being pregnant can force women to cut back hours or even lose a job. Then comes the double whammy cost of child care. So yeah, they're trying to tackle this child poverty problem from a local level. I know there has been bills to get the child tax credit stuff going again, so trying to help people in at least a few different ways. So yeah, it's good to see.
And next up, in a little thing that just caused, well, I mean, say it might have caused some consternation. Senator Chuck Schumer has called on Israel to hold new elections to replace not Netanyahu in order to achieve peace.
Because as has been markedly clear over the past few months, that Netanyahu does not have interest in any form of peace that doesn't include the destruction of Palestine, which is not a new idea for him. He's been in office in Israel for a good part of the last like 20 years, and that's very much been his position, that he does not like the Palestinian people, much less the, you know, the tenuous agreement they have with Hamas to run them that is mostly one-sided at this point. But yeah, you know, you get the Chuck Schumer here, the top-ranking Jewish elected official in the U.S., so calling for him to be replaced because he is the main obstacle to peace in the country, which is not a huge surprise. As he says here, Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take precedence over the best interests of Israel. And also saying Israel cannot survive if it becomes a pariah. He says that Israel needs to make some serious course corrections, including allowing more aid into Gaza, though asserted that the country had shouldered too much of the blame for the civilian death toll, which is now estimated to be more than 30,000 people, which is not great. Because Israel's happy to kill a bunch of civilians. Especially the IDF that is almost mockingly happy to kill civilians all the time. But yeah, this is certainly some good progress. I believe there was some bit of news that Hamas would be open to a ceasefire agreement. Maybe not the best one that they would want, but obviously Netanyahu and not allow for any official agreements of that sort that doesn't include, you know, a lot more dead people. So there you go. At least we got people here starting to turn the tides and understand the length that Israel is willing to go to get what they want. Even if the people there overwhelmingly do not agree with that. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Next up, we got a couple of Trump stories. Trump's New York trial is delayed until mid-April. So, yeah, it's going to be a couple, few weeks.
Yeah, this is because the U.S. AG just dropped a ton of documents on them at the last moment. So they, District Attorney Alvin Bragg's legal team said they would not oppose a 30-day delay, so they have delayed it to mid-April for that. I don't know if they have a specific date here yet. But yeah, they're going to allow for a delay to kind of let both teams kind of get into these records that the U.S. Attorney's Office has submitted to them for this case. Because I guess they've just been dragging their feet the DOJ on this, and that's not great. It has sort of led to this case being delayed even further than it really needed to. So yeah, there you go.
Yep. And just to more political stuff, we can, although the primaries, I guess, technically are still going on. Both Trump and Biden have clinched their party's presidential nominations for 2024. And I'm pretty sure this is the first time in history that the same two candidates from a previous election are going up against each other again in the subsequent election.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty unsurprising here. But, yeah, definitely do not ignore your primaries because they're probably local. Election stuff going on there, so be sure to check that out. I believe Florida is a place where they fucked this up because they canceled the primary, but there's a lot of local elections that it's probably going to tip in favor of Republicans as the Florida Democrats just de-incentivizing people to go vote in general for elections that'll be a bit more important to their local neighborhoods and such. So yeah, still reason to keep checking what your primaries, primary stuff you got going on. I think we got ours coming up here maybe next week, so I have to double check myself what's going on there.
Moving on from there, the current nominee for the GOP's nominee for governor of North Carolina, he's a terrible person. He said a lot of awful things. He's done a lot of awful things.
Yeah. He's the current lieutenant governor, but the new nominee for governor, Mark Robinson, has basically said a lot of awful shit. Yeah, so Republicans are hoping there won't be much attention to this stuff, but yeah, he, let's see, Trump called him Martin Luther King on steroids, and I'm pretty sure it's only because he's black. Robinson has expressed skepticism about the Holocaust on Facebook. While he'd be North Carolina's first ever black governor, he's been critical of the civil rights movement, saying integration caused black people to abandon black-owned businesses. The civil rights movement destroyed hundreds of very well-run black schools. He said in a 2018 podcast interview, they destroyed black businesses across the nation. It's like, I'm pretty sure that wasn't the black people. It was the white people getting back at him for wanting more rights. Man, 2021, he criticized teachers for discussing LGBTQ issues in school, saying there's no reason anybody anywhere in America should be telling any child about transgenderism, homosexuality, any of that filth. And yes, I called it filth. So in 2022, he told a church audience that Christians should be led by men rather than women, saying we are called to be the Christians that God has called us to be. And we are called, here I'm getting ready to get in trouble, called to be led by men. Later issued a statement saying the comments were directed towards men, encouraging men to stand up and take on the role of leadership. Let's see. His primary opponents replayed some of those comments on TV ads, but the question whether he can beat Stein in November, who is the Democrat running against him, which would be fun to see them elect a Democrat after the way they've gerrymandered their House seats in North Carolina and the Senate seats. Let's see here. Yeah. Yeah, they've had a Democratic Governor Roy Cooper in office for the last two terms, but the state legislature has been controlled by Republicans since 2011. So, yeah, this will be a, not about a fun thing, but yeah, be an interesting election to follow here. Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah. And now for something that's just downright sinister. John Barnett, who is one of the major whistleblowers against the Boeing company, was found dead in his truck this week.
Yeah. And it very much kind of calls into question of the how this happened. I believe they did find him. Yeah, he was found in a vehicle in a Holiday Inn parking lot in Charleston on Saturday. One day earlier, he testified in deposition related to the string of problems he says he identified at Boeing's plant where he once helped inspect the 787 Dreamliner aircraft before delivery to customers. Let's see, he was in the middle of giving deposition testimony in his whistleblower retaliation case against Boeing when he died. Yeah, so people think there's some foul play here. I don't know if they'll find evidence of that, but yeah, they're sent to, the police were sent to the hotel to conduct a welfare check after people were unable to contact Barnett. They traveled to Charleston to testify in his lawsuit against Boeing. Upon the arrival, officers discovered a male inside a vehicle suffering from a gunshot wound to the head. He was pronounced deceased at the scene. Which, yeah, definitely gives off some bad vibes there. Especially because I think Boeing was the one that announced this news for some reason, versus like letting the police announce it.
Yeah, that was incredibly just weird. And the Boeing stuff just keeps getting worse, because this week there was an older Boeing plane that landed in Oregon with a missing panel.
Yeah, this just happened today. An older Boeing 737-800 had just arrived at its destination in Southern Oregon on Friday after flying from San Francisco with a missing panel. I'm trying to see what the panel was for. It landed safely without incident. The external panel was discovered missing during a post-flight inspection. No injuries were reported, but yeah, the pictures of it, I don't think they have it here directly. doesn't look great. The airport paused operations, checked the runway and airfield for debris.
Mm-hmm.
Found none, so that must mean it happened sometime during the flight. They believe the United ground crew or pilots doing a routine inspection before the next flight were the ones who noticed the missing panel.
Mm-hmm.
So, luckily everybody was okay, but it continues to add more kindling to the fire around Boeing right now, as they're under a lot of scrutiny from the FAA. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how this goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boeing, shit's going down for them. By the way, last week tonight actually did like a whole episode about Boeing and just how badly they as a company have degenerated since they were bought out by, I forgot what the other company is, that basically they ended up firing all of the engineers and replaced the leadership of the company with just money people. And ever since then, Boeing's like quality has just nosedived in some really awful ways. But yeah, now for some good news. America's very first commercial scale offshore wind farm is officially open off the coast of Long Island.
Yeah. Which is pretty neat to see.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Danish wind energy developer Ørsted and the utility Eversource built a 12-turbine wind farm called South Fork Wind, 35 miles east of Montauk Point, New York. I guess the governor, Kathy Hochul, was there to announce the turbines are delivering clean power to the local electric grid, flipping a massive light switch to turn on the future, as she said. Probably gonna be something we're gonna have to do more of, because it's pretty easy places to set up lots of these things take advantage of the windiness of these offshore areas to deal with that.
And I'm glad this stuff is like starting to become a reality, really. The more we can sort of start shifting our country's, energy output over to these other sources, we need to do it. It needs to happen, and I'm glad it's finally happening.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's fast enough to really do a whole lot, at least not right now, but it'll definitely be something we need later. And now for a story that's just hilarious. Pornhub has turned off access in the state of Texas after its new age verification law went into effect. And it's specifically what's in this age verification law that's the problem. Because it's essentially them trying to collect a list of people who consume porn.
They've been in a legal battle with Texas's attorney general over an age verification law. Last week, a federal appeals court upheld the Texas law requiring pornography sites to institute age verification measures to ensure only adults 18 and older are able to access them, but also struck down a part of the law requiring porn sites to display health warnings about the content. That came after a previous federal judge's ruling that the Texas law violated U.S. Constitution's First Amendment prohibition against free speech restrictions, which the Texas AG's office immediately appealed. New message displayed Thursday to users with internet addresses in Texas on Pornhub and other sites operated by their parent company, ALO. Explained that it was disabling access to comply with the law as first reported by the Houston Chronicle. As you may know, your elected officials in Texas are requiring us to verify your age before allowing you access to our website. Not only does this impinge on the rights of adults to access protected speech, it fails strict scrutiny by employing the least effective, yet also most restrictive means of accomplishing Texas' stated purpose of allegedly protecting minors. They said, until the real solution is offered, we have made the decision to completely disable access to our website in Texas. Doing so, we are complying with the law, as we always do. We hope that governments around the world will implement laws that actually protect the safety and security of users. And then while safety and compliance are at the forefront of our mission, providing identification every time you want to visit an adult platform is not an effective solution. Mm-hmm. We're protecting users online and, in fact, will put minors and your privacy at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they called it the new law ineffective, haphazard, and dangerous. I said it will drive users from those few websites which comply to the thousands of websites with far fewer safety measures in place which do not comply. Very few sites are able to compare to the robust trust and safety measures we currently have in place. I don't know what that is. You just saw video. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
To protect minors and user privacy, any legislation must be enforced against all platforms offering adult content. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It'll probably require everybody to have accounts and somehow post verifying information to it, which seems like an easy way to get that site hacked so that people, you know, lose the pictures of their photo IDs and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even worse.
Mm.
So I do wonder how many people even have accounts on those kind of sites.
Mm-hmm.
Considering you can just watch them normally, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe they give you some better features or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're going to pay for them then, sure. But again, there's lots of free porn on the internet. You could use Bing to find them all.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. And now we're going into the entertainment portion of the show. The Boy and the Heron will be streaming on Max as Warner Brothers Discovery renews their Studio Ghibli deal. Which is good because I want to see this movie. It's a recent Miyazaki flick and I haven't seen it, so.
Yeah. Don't know if they have a date here. They did renew the deal that they've had. They've had the deal since 2020. Under the deal renewal, Max will be the future home of The Boy and the Heron. The streaming premiere date on Max will be announced later this year.
Mm.
Jeez, later this year, that sounds way further off than I would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
The extension with G-Kids will also keep nearly two dozen Studio Ghibli films exclusively on Max in the U.S. for at least the next several years.
Mm-hmm.
I guess WB Discovery declined to disclose the term of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So great.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of good movies there. I haven't watched many of the recent ones.
Mm-hmm.
Like Earwig and the Witch when Marnie was there. Mm-hmm. The Tale of the Prince Kaguya.
Yeah.
The Wind Rises from Up on Poppy Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably everything post Ponyo up to mm-hmm. The Boy and the Heron. I've watched that one.
Mm.
Which I think a lot of those are probably from his son.
Mm-hmm.
Miyazaki's son and the other director.
Yeah.
The guy that does a lot of the cat ones.
Yeah.
Cat Returns and all that.
Yeah.
I forget what his name is.
I'm forgetting it as well, but I knew who you're talking about.
Toshio Suzuki.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the other co-founder. So yeah.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I did see Max has a deal for year subs, 12-month mm-hmm. subs for 30% off. So if you want to get in on a Max sub that isn't paying them $15+ a month,
mm-hmm.
You can get it for a little bit cheaper for 1 year and then don't have to think about it again for another year.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It's a thing you can do.
Yeah. We also got news that Patty Jenkins is working on another Rogue Squadron. Well, not another, but working on a Rogue Squadron movie. Again, after, attempts to make Wonder Woman 3 have fallen through.
Yeah. Saying that, let's see. Yeah, she said that she owes, when I left Star Wars to do Wonder Woman 3, I started working on that. We talked about, well, maybe I'll come back to Star Wars after Wonder Woman 3. So we started a deal for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When Wonder Woman 3 then went away, Lucasfilm and I were like, oh, we got to finish this deal. We finished the deal right as the strike was beginning. So now I owe a draft to Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens there. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, yeah. They have a hard job in front of them of what's the first movie they're going to do. They have other directors who have been working, but I'm now back on doing Rogue Squadron. We'll see what happens. We need to get it to where we're both super happy with it. So. That is seemingly confirming that she's going to be working on Rogue Squadron. Doesn't mean it's going to be officially happening. She's working on the script for it or the draft for it. So basically getting to the point, making a pitch that she has a good idea for this new movie. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, they agree to it and then they can start working on it officially. But yeah, so it's like one of those handful of Star Wars movies they just announced and disappeared for a while. And then as she was having other projects show up, like Wonder Woman 3, Wonder Woman 2 and 3, 3 fell through and she kind of had to decide what her next thing is. And she's going back to Star Wars. So hopefully that works out. That'd be cool to see Star Wars movie not focusing on the Jedi so much.
And I mean, the Rogue Squadron themselves have a pretty good lore behind them too. So I'm interested in seeing what they come up with.
And you can see where two of Final Fantasy's bigger reoccurring characters come from. Biggs and Wedge. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And finally, last but not least, we got an official trailer for a new version of The Crow. And I don't know if you know anything about The Crow franchise, but this The Crow has had an awful time in getting out, you know, sequels or remakes or TV shows or whatever, and basically all of them being terrible. The original Crow movie is a classic, and they have never been able to replicate it. But in this case, they're going to give it another shot.
Yeah. They got some interesting talent on this. Bill Skarsgård, FKA Twigs, and Danny Houston on this. Looks interesting.
Yeah, it looks interesting, but
I didn't really like the original either. I've seen it like once or twice and never really grabbed me.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's more like watching because obviously the legend of it's having Brandon Lee work on it, you know.
Yeah.
The son of
Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee, who died during the move the filming of the movie, and they kind of did what they could to finish it up without him, and kind of just turned into a weird project. Somehow came out in a way that kind of became a cult hit. But yeah, it was kind of very much that gothy kind of movie that I just couldn't get into. So it did lead to a wrestler kind of changing his entire persona, Sting. It was a surfer Sting for much of his career in the 80s and early 90s.
And his, if you've ever seen like his original like face paint, it's obvious that he was like heavily inspired by the Ultimate Warrior starting out. But then, like, when the mid-90s, he basically just switched over to just being the Crow.
Yeah.
Like, straight up. It's like, it's not even subtle. He is the Crow.
Yeah. Which was cool. He had his retirement match in AEW a couple weeks ago and had both of his sons were there with him.
Yep.
Both were dressed like various parts of his career. One of them was dressed like his Surfer Sting. And the other one, like, when he was in... the NWO Wolfpack for a bit, so the red and the red face paint with the Crow mask on it.
Yeah, that whole thing with the NWO storyline was just a freaking that is because he basically became like the embodiment of the enemy of the NWO, and he turned into like this weird mysterious character that they would rarely ever actually bring out to like wrestle. Like you remember in that era, he very rarely actually like got in the ring to wrestle. He usually just showed up like, you know, winding down from the rafters on like a wire. And he, you know, just his very presence was enough to just drive to just cause drama. And he never spoke either. That's the other thing. You know, he rarely said anything. Like I remember the one time when I played like WCW Nitro on PlayStation, which was like the first time I had heard him say anything in like years.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That was a whole weird part of, the Wolfpack was just a weird thing where they had the overwhelmingly popular NWO, and they're like, how can we get more of that? We create a second NWO group.
It's like a spinoff group that's like against the other group, and it's made up of like a bunch of the older members.
Yeah, like all the people didn't fit into any other storylines, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think Buff Bagwell was in there, and it's like, why are
Buff
these
Bagwell people- was in there. Both Scott Hall and Kevin Nash ended up in there.
Yeah, they were in the original group and somehow decided to go over there.
Randy Savage was in there.
Yeah.
It was a weird time. It was the point where you realized that WCW had legit run out of ideas.
Yeah. That's probably around when they had the Kiss Demon wrestler.
Yep.
It didn't go anywhere. There's the like Glacier, the Mortal Kombat character, who's
yeah.
an unofficial Mortal Kombat character.
Yeah, he's literally just Sub-Zero. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was Berlin. Do you remember that guy? He was like this dude. They like hyped him up a bunch, and then he showed up and he turned out to be a heel. And for some weird reason, he had this bizarre hatred of Buff Bagwell for
complete.
Yeah, it was odd.
Yeah,
that era of WCW was ridiculous.
Which I think was around when they had the movie. I forget what the movie was called with David Arquette that kickstarted him becoming a wrestler.
Yeah, and he ended up getting like an actual. Getting the championship belt, which is
he won the title belts from a wild match. It was like, I forget what they called it. So it was like maybe the three stages of hell or something like that. It was three cages on top of each other, but they're progressively smaller. But you had to like work your way up from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the weirdest match types I've ever seen. And I don't think they've really done it too much since then. He won that. Then there was David Flair was involved. It's Ric Flair's son. In case you know, Charlotte Flair, who's incredibly successful as a women's wrestler.
Yeah.
She wasn't the first of the Flair children to try to wrestle. David Flair wrestled and then just went away.
Yep.
He wasn't that good, but his whole thing was just like, I'm Ric Flair's son.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a title shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, okay, wrestler, and that was it. Nobody cared.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. That's about it.
Yeah.
There's a Crow movie.
Yeah.
Maybe check it out. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. With that, I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We got ourselves a show. So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, you got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or really any kind of podcast aggregator that you can think of. And if you don't see it and you find one and we're not on it, just wait a minute. We don't really have much going on in our lives. We'll find out. We'll find a way to get to it and put ourselves on there. But we're going to go ahead and wind it down there. Thanks once again, Chris, for Sologi, for joining me on this little excursion. If you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your coworkers, your mortal enemies, and everyone in between, because they may hate you, but they just might look like us. And, you know, that's a win-win for everyone, far as I'm concerned. But yeah, so that'll be it for tonight. Join us next week when we hopefully will have better news to talk about. Not just a bunch of depressing shit, but it is an election year, so I wouldn't get your hopes up. Good night, everybody.